Okay, I'm gonna start in a second. The tea is very attractive. Just before we start, so just a housekeeping thing. So we'll continue on the series today and next week, and then we'll do one more week, but it'll be more on Pesach, the sort of lessons from Pesach, and then that'll be the end of the term. Ready to go. Nice to be there. Yeah, Pesach already, exactly. Okay, so this is week 5. Lessons from 2020. We've called it Throw Away the Peel, Eat the Fruit. And just want to start off with a little bit of a review from last week. So last week we talked about reflecting on managing change, and that the best time to think about it is when things are going well, which for us in New South Wales is now, I think. You know, I've been saying this a lot, but just a funny thing. You know, you realize it when you talk to people overseas. So a few days ago we had the Brit of our grandson, who was just born. So we had, you know, still a bit of restrictions here, so we're in the house, and people, we had it on Zoom, it's okay. But on Zoom there were people from family. That's one of the advantages of Zoom. So we had family, my son-in-law's family from South Africa, some uncles and aunts, some relatives from Israel, from England. And afterwards, there was a whole discussion on Zoom. They couldn't understand. They were looking at this Brit, and they couldn't understand how people were standing there without masks, and they were like, and they were sitting there. And like, and we've like forgotten about it already. You know. But it's that's exactly right. So it's nice. In a way, it's nice just to keep on recognizing that we're very blessed. But nevertheless, you know, it's still change. So, but anyway, so it's still a good time to think about change because we did go through a lot of changes over the year, and it's a good time to reflect on change when it's going well. And we talked about change being a threatening thing, something we're not used to. Even when change is for the good, we get threatened, as the Jews were threatened when they left Egypt and so on. So just very, you know, I'm just doing a review. So a very quick summary, we talked about three things. One is identity. Second was hope and persistence. And the other was destination. So identity was the concept of values, convictions, the difference between doing and being, purpose and meaning, and that when we talk about when we live our life with values and that becomes our identity, then those things don't change. Those things can always be implemented no matter what is happening, and therefore it helps us deal with change better. The other was hope and persistence, belief in others, belief in ourselves, that we could do it even though we fail. But when we live with values, failure is not a problem. Failure is a part of the journey of how we implement our values. And therefore, we're not defined by the failure. And on the contrary, we get stronger. Our values and convictions get stronger when we do encounter failure. Not that we invite failure, but if it happens or when it happens, that's what we do. And the other one was destination, that we all need to have goals. And the goals are long-term goals based on our values. It's those long-term mission statements. But then the important thing is that every single day, we're not going to reach our goal. Every single day, we do one little, we think about what is one little step that I could take to make me closer to my goal, focusing on the day that we're in, on the experience that we're in, focusing on the now. Like the story of the splitting of the Red Sea, where God said, no surrendering, no fighting, no praying, just move on and keep traveling. Ah, there's a sea in the front, but it doesn't matter. You can still take one step forward. And when they did, the sea split, and that was the lesson. Okay. So today, bless you. Today I want to talk about another topic, and I want to talk about another thing that I think is good to reflect on and learn from the year. It's a big topic, and it's a general topic, I think more of a global topic, but there's lots of lessons that we can learn in our life. It's connected to some of the things we've talked about in the past, but nevertheless in a different context. So it's the topic is about balance, nuance, and looking at the bigger picture. Okay, so I would like to think that in 2020 we learned this lesson, that we learned a big lesson as we struggled together, right? Now, not everyone has learned this lesson, this is clear, because the world, in a large part of the world, it's still become a very polarized and extreme world, which is completely absent at looking at the bigger picture or looking at any nuanced sort of balance, right? But nevertheless, hopefully some people learned the lesson, and we can certainly reflect on it. And let me break it down and explain to you what I mean, but let me give you first a bit of a introduction, and then sort of understand it on a global level, and then what does it mean to our life? Because things that we learn from governments and big people, that doesn't necessarily, it's not relevant to us, as we spoke about a few weeks ago, it's relevant, it makes good topic conversation, you know, we find someone to bash and to criticize, but it doesn't really change us unless we learn of how to apply it in our own life. So, in the Talmud, there's a discussion twice, responding to a particular question with two different answers, and they have two very important answers. On the question of Ezehu Chacham, who is a wise person? Right? That's a famous question in Pirkei Avot, in the Ethics of the Fathers, it's asked, and plus somewhere else. So in Pirkei Avot, there's a very famous passage where there was a great sage called Ben Zoma, and he said, he asked four questions. He said, who's wise, who's strong, who's rich, and who's honored, right? I'll read you the whole thing because it's a beautiful passage, even though I'm going to just focus on one. He said, who is wise? He who learns from every person, right? Who's strong? The person who's able to conquer his own impulses, his own inclination. Who is rich? Someone who's content with their lot. And who's honored? The person who honors others. Now, obviously, as the commentaries point out, he's responding to common misconceptions, right? So obviously, normally if you see a person who appears to be very wise and lots of students and he's teaching and he knows a lot, you say, that's a wise person. He says, no, that's not necessarily a wise person. He could have lots of knowledge. It doesn't mean it's a wise person, right? That person might not grow, might not advance because he has a database of knowledge, but it doesn't make him wise. Wise means you learn from other people continuously, right? Strong, when we think of strong, we think of physical strength. He says, no, real strength is inner strength, overcoming what we call our yetzer hara, overcoming temptation, overcoming our personality weaknesses, overcoming anger, and so on and so forth. When we talk about rich, we think of material possessions. He says, no, the true wealthy person is a person who's happy with what they have. And honored, also, you know, we think of who's the person who's honored, the person who's, the guest of honor at a dinner or something. He says, no, an honored person, of course, is a person who honors others. That's the truly honored person. Okay. But this concept, right, of learning from others is such an important thing. You know, before we get to the second answer to this question, during this year, upon reflection, during a time where everything was sprung upon us, which is completely new, you know, the wisest people, I think, throughout this year, were the people who said they don't know anything, and they're still learning, right? I think those are the people who were the wisest. Those are the people that turned out to be the wisest. There were many, many people who jumped to conclusions right away and stuck with those conclusions, because people who aren't wise generally jump to conclusions and that's their paradigm for the next 10 years, right? And it doesn't matter. It could be a gender-based, could be not a gender-based, it could be just because they arrived at that conclusion and they don't want to feel wrong, but because there are certain people who need to have opinions, and they always think, right? So we have all kinds of medical opinions and political opinions right from the beginning. Some people are still stuck with them, and it's clear now that they're completely wrong, right? Of course, things that we thought helped in the beginning don't help, things we thought we knew didn't, are not true anymore, because it's an evolving thing. There were many doctors I spoke to myself who actually were so refreshing, and they're really wise people, because they actually told me that they don't know. And they said, talk to me again in 6 weeks. Now we're going to go by what we have. And by the way, medically, even halakhically, that's an important principle. Sometimes it doesn't help not to know. You've got to make a decision. And that's fine, because we only make decisions generally in life based on the information we have, right? And if we don't have the information, so we do our best. But we also do our best knowing that we could change that decision in 6 weeks when we get new information, or in 6 months, or in a few months, right? And wise people were the people that said, we need to learn from what we know already, and we need to give that advice based on what we know already, but we are still learning, and that advice could change, right? So that's one form of being wise, continuously learning, continuously asking, learning from others' knowledge, learning from others' experience, learning from others' older advice or more experienced advice, whatever the case. That's a general concept. But there's also a different type of chacham. There's a different type of wise person. And that is a different answer to the same question that's stated somewhere else in the Talmud. There's a very fascinating piece in the Talmud. I'll just give you the context. It's just interesting. You know, one of the greatest emperors in history was Alexander the Great, right? Who the Talmud talks about quite a bit, by the way. In Talmudic language, it's called Alexander Mukdon. By the way, it's interesting. He was Alexander. He was king of Macedonia, right? And he became really. He was the one who gave rise to the Greek Empire, the Greek culture, the Greek Empire, and so on and so forth. You ever wondered, by the way, why so many Jews are called Alexandra? Alexander, right? Sorry, it's a Jewish name. Do you know why? Sorry, Sin is Alexander, right? It's an official Jewish name today. You know why? There's a whole story. It's nothing to do with the Shira, but just interesting. There's a whole story of him wanting. He conquered most of the civilized world in his time. He was quite a warrior. I mean, he fell eventually, but as emperors do and empires do. And he was on his way to conquer Israel. Another time, there was a temple there, and he was on the way to Israel, and the Kohen Gadol, the high priest at the time, was a person called Shimon HaTzadik, right? He's mentioned in Pirkei Avot as well, a great sage. And he decided to go out and greet the emperor, greet Alexander. And it says in the Talmud he put on the priestly garments, which in itself was a whole discussion. How was he allowed to do that? Because halachically, you're only allowed to wear them in the temple. But anyway, he did it. He put on these beautiful garments and he went to greet them. And Alexander, he bowed down before him and he greeted him and he made peace with him. And Alexander said to him, am I going to win the next war? And he wasn't talking about the war in Israel. He was on the way to a different country to conquer. Am I going to win the next war? And he said, because I was going on a war and I saw an image of a person that looked like you. Shimon HaTzadik said, yes, you will win the next war, and I have that on good authority. And he did. And then he spared Israel, and that was a big thing. And the Jews decided to honor him. They honored him two ways. One of the ways they honored him was they put a special something in the temple. I've forgotten what it was now, to honor him. And also, at that particular moment, at that time, all the boys that were born were called Alexander. Oh, there we are. So ever since then it became a Jewish name. And if you ever wondered how Alexander became a Jewish name. So anyway, so the Talmud says that there was a bunch of people, it's not clear who they were exactly, but they were called the elders of the south. And they were very, very wise people. And Alexander the Great summoned them, and he asked him 10 questions, all kinds of questions about the creation, about God, all different things. And one of the questions he asked them was, he says, "Iden mitkari hakim," in Aramaic. He said, "Who is called a wise man? Who's called a wise man?" And they answered, "Haroe et hanolad," someone who sees what will be born out of what I'm going to do now. Someone who sees the bigger picture. Someone who sees the consequences. Right? Now, interesting enough, the commentators point out that this actually was already said by King Solomon. King Solomon in Kohelet, which I can never pronounce in English, Ecclesiastes, thank you. Right? He says, Hachacham einav berosho. He says, a wise person, King Solomon says, his eyes are on his head. Now, most people have their eyes on their head, and a lot of people are not smart, are not wise. Right? So what does he mean? The commentary explained. A wise person is not a person who has knowledge. Well, you need knowledge for wisdom too, that's true. But a wise person, a person who sees far. Einav berosho. His eyes are in his head, and he sees far. Now, sort of, just while we're on this topic, I want to just tie this with a very interesting story in the Chumash. You know, I often draw on experiences or stories from Yosef HaTzadik, right? But you know the story with Joseph. Pharaoh had a dream, right? The dream of the 7 cows, with the lean cows, and so on. And he couldn't find anyone to interpret his dreams, and according to the Chumash, and according to the Midrashim, and so on, he summoned all the wise people of Egypt, and they all gave me interpretations which seemed fairly plausible, about 7 daughters and 7 sons and 7 this and 7 that, right? And he rejected all of them, right? Finally, Yosef comes along and he interprets the dreams, and Pharaoh says, you've got it. You're amazing. You're going to be the viceroy of Egypt. You're going to help me out with this whole 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. And he says to him, Ein navon v'chacham ata. Kamocha. There's no Navon and Chacham. Navon is an understander, Chacham is a wise person, interchangeable words, right? But he uses two expressions. You're the wisest and the most understanding person. So what was so wise about Yosef? What was so amazing, right? In other words, why was his interpretation about seven plenty years and seven lean years so much more incredibly smart and incredibly ingenious, different to what all the others had said, right? They all have to do with multiple seven. I mean, obviously, if the dream has to mean something, there's seven fat cows and seven lean cows, obviously it's got to do with two sets of seven. It's not a huge deal, right? Okay, so there's many, many answers in the commentaries. But one of the answers I saw yesterday, one of the commentaries explains why it was a double expression. It has to do with these two answers that we just said. Yosef had two things going for him. One of the things was, there was an aspect in the dream that he studied the facts. He studied it properly. He didn't just take it superficially. He studied the information available to him. One of the concepts of the dream was, right, it's an interesting thing, that Pharaoh had dreamed that there were seven lean cows and seven fat cows, right? And then the lean cows ate up the fat cows, right? I don't know if you remember the story of Joseph, right? And then there was one extra detail which none of the other interpreters had chapped. And that was that when the lean cows ate up the fat cows, they still looked lean. They were still thin. You know, halavai for some of us, right? If we could do that, it'd be great, right? But that was the cows. They ate the fat cows, and they still looked lean. Joseph was listening, right? So when we say, who's the chacham alomed b'kol adam, someone who learns from everyone, learns from everyone means listens to everyone also, picks up the details, understands the nuances, understands what's going on, right? So when he said it's going to be seven plenty years and then seven lean years, and the famine is going to be so strong that you won't even remember the fat years. The thin years will eat up the fat years and you won't even see, right? In other words, he covered that detail and Pharaoh said, ah, that's a wise person. That was part one. Part two was, Yosef did something that the others never did. Yosef added, he was only asked a question, right? He was asked a question, please interpret my dream. So what does he do, like a real Jew? He interprets the dream and then he gives advice. There's an expression in Yiddish, "Veret dir gebeten," like who asked you for advice? But he gave advice, right? Gave advice, says, let me tell you exactly what to do, how to do this. Because let's look at the bigger picture, let's look at the whole 14 years. There's going to be plenty years, going to be thin years. If you leave it the way it is, this is what's going to happen. The thin cows are going to eat up the fat cows, they're going to look just as thin, but there's a way you can do this. Let me give you a strategy. The strategy is you can collect stuff while the plenty years are going on. Whatever, he gave him the whole strategy of how to stock up while there was plenty years, and he'll have for the lean years, right? Pharaoh says, you're a taka wise person. In other words, I didn't ask you for advice, but I asked you for your wisdom. And your wisdom is to look at everything. So that's what Yosef did, and that's why he became the viceroy of Egypt within 30 minutes, right? He became the second most powerful person in Egypt. Because Pharaoh was someone, obviously he was smart, Pharaoh understood and acknowledged and could pick up on wisdom, and that was true wisdom. Not someone who can study facts or can memorize facts, but someone who can actually look at the bigger picture. So that's a really, really important thing. Now what's it got to do with 2020? So we've talked about this many times, but it's such an important thing, and I think it's an important thing to take to our life in general. But let's just talk about on a global level, right? So exactly a year ago, the world was hit by a pandemic, which the world responded to, right? What the world did initially in the first couple of weeks, understandably so, was respond to the information, the crisis at hand, right? So what do? We locked up the world. Right? The wise among the world quickly realized that it's actually not such a good thing. What do I mean? Yeah, health-wise is a good thing, right? So you had a virus. The virus was something that was going to kill us. It was fatal. And in fact, it was fatal. It was fatal to many people. Many people died, right? Many people did the wrong thing. Many people didn't hear the advice. Many people were negligent, irresponsible to themselves, irresponsible to each other. The virus got them, and there was a lot of death, and there was a lot of sickness, right? But when we talk about who's a chacham haro'et hanolad, many people saw what was in front of them. Less people saw the bigger picture. And that's the problem, right? And it's a problem we're still suffering from today. because the virus wasn't the only thing that was fatal. Economic ruin was fatal for lots of people too, right? Anxiety and mental health was fatal for a lot of people. Unfortunately, there was a rise in people taking their own lives. There was a fascinating thing, if you talk to doctors, I was very fascinated by this whole subject, I spoke to a lot of people. A lot of people ignored other health issues, right? You know, you couldn't get sick this year. The only virus you're allowed to have this year was COVID. Did you know that, right? If you had a heart issue or a sore throat or pneumonia, pneumonia maybe yes, because it's connected to COVID, but, right? If you got, God forbid, a very serious illness, but nothing to do with your respiratory system, no one wants to know about it, right? And people got very sick. And probably people died, right? And now there's published stuff in this, and there's anecdotal stuff in this. It's actually quite crazy. People are still struggling to know what the long-term mental health effect is going to be from all this. But I mean, there's lots of stuff written on it now. There's if you talk to people who work in mental health, psychologists, psychiatrists, they've done very well this year. Seriously, I mean, you know. The Zoom company and the mental health experts have done really, really well this year, right? But seriously, you cannot get an appointment. I know a doctor in Melbourne, because Victoria's worse than here, in terms of not seeing the bigger picture, but who is a GP, a fascinating thing, someone I know very well, who's a GP, often has to refer people to other professionals, sometimes refers children to psychologists for anxiety and stuff like that, younger children. She cannot find a psychologist who's got an appointment. It's an amazing thing. It's crazy.
Is there a shortage of children's psychologists?
Generally.
Generally.
But now it's out of control. Yes. So that's generally. But she was a person who had contacts and was able normally to refer in pre-COVID. She said she cannot find. Right? There was a summer camp that I know. This is incredible stuff. There was a summer camp that was for young children, and people who were in charge of children said an crazy thing. This happened last summer. Most children came with melatonin tablets.
Wow.
Because they were
I mean,
it's not particularly dangerous, melatonin, but because they're having sleep issues, right? Wow. And you know, children don't let on, by the way. It's really serious. Children don't let on. Many children don't let on when they're suffering, right? They won't let on what's really in their mind, what's really worrying them. You just imagine like the uncertainty, the things people say, the stuff that's on the news. I mean, news, media is another issue, right? Like people like just like to make, I mean, you know, we have the little outbreaks here. I used to love looking at the last one, Northern Beaches, for example. I love looking at the headlines every day. Have you ever noticed them? New South Wales scrambles to contain outbreak. They're talking about three cases of COVID, right? I mean, if you look at it, you think like that, I don't know, something just like absolute, right? So these are the bigger picture. I mean, I've said this last week and I've said this many times. I think we're very blessed here in New South Wales. I think someone that does look at the bigger picture is our government here, Gladys and her team. I think quite amazing. She tries her best to contain the virus, but always take into account economy, mental health, life in general, and so on and so forth. And that's a real in decision making, both globally, communally, and even individually. With older people, with vulnerable people, we can't just lock people up. The effect is unbelievably strong, right? Because there are other things besides the virus. But that's chacham, that's being wise. And I think that's something we can learn from this year, that we cannot just look at one small slice of what's happening. One has to look at the bigger picture and the consequences. Nolad means, ro'e natolad means, you have to look at what is going to come out of this. Now, obviously, sometimes we do things in medicine particularly which cause short-term pain for a bigger picture gain. That's true, and that we need to do. We give people operations and we put them at risk with anesthesia and other things, right? Obviously, we need to do that. But it needs to be very, very well thought out. In halakha, for example, there's a huge body of literature about risk-taking and comparing risk and benefits and so on like that, and taking into account the bigger picture, right? I was going to do this later, but let me share with you now. There's an amazing piece of Talmud, which is fascinating. It actually talks about, like, priorities, right? So it's a Talmud which talks about, it's an opinion of a great Talmudist called Rabbi Yossi. And a very interesting ethical dilemma, right? So it comes on the back of this. So you've got two cities, and there's a shortage of water supply. Okay. And there's a spring that the water supply belongs to the one city more than it does to the other. So what's the obligation of the city? Okay, so without going into this particular aspect, but basically the view of the Talmud is, and generally in Halakha, that the city, its priority is its city, right? So if it only has enough water for its own welfare, then that's what they got to do, and that's not their responsibility, or it even shouldn't be their responsibility, to then siphon off some of that water supply to a different city, because they will compromise the life of people in their city, and their responsibility is their city, and the other city has to then worry about it and do whatever they need to do to get the right amount of water. Okay. But then the Talmud says an amazing thing, and it's quite an interesting thing, because it gives us a bit of an insight, because it's an often discussed thing. For example, how you distribute resources, right? So for example, let's say, put it into a modern context. Let's say a country or a city or a state has a certain amount of money, right?
Vaccinations.
A priority of vaccination, yes. Like, I'm talking about something else. I'm talking about resources generally. Like, so for example, the example I'm thinking of is like this, right? So let's say you have enough... Let's say you have enough money. You have a certain amount of budget, right? And you could put money towards building another hospital, right? So often we see criticism, which may be sometimes justified. I'm not political now. I'm just saying, right? Why they spend so much money on another park, for example? Why don't they put that money better in building a hospital, right? And it's actually not that simple at all. So let me tell you what the Talmud says. The Talmud says, okay. So if a city has enough water only for its drinking water, only for its inhabitants, it has to keep it and take care of its own inhabitants. Okay. How about if a city has enough water supply? Again, going on the principle that the responsibility of the city is its own city, okay? Just let's accept that for a moment. Now the city has enough water supply for its own city to drink water and to do laundry. But the other city hasn't even got enough for drinking water. Rabbi Yossi says they keep the water for the drinking and for the laundry. Why? Because he says that a city that won't be able to do laundry is putting itself at risk and ultimately will lead to death. Right? And just an example of it's not only the immediate need often. It's not only what happened, what do I do today to save myself? Now, this is subject for discussion, it's subject for debate, there's other opinions in the Talmud, but it brings out a fascinating... Living, creating well-being for a person is a combination of lots of different components, right? For example, in a country has to have parks. You know, it's an interesting thing. Maybe I shouldn't bring this up, but I often think about this because I hear it on the radio. So every year there's a discussion, this year particularly, about the fireworks on New Year's Eve, right? Now, I'm not a particularly big fireworks fan. I never watch it. My kids used to go to, but I couldn't care less. I've seen it. It's done. I don't need to see it every year. I go to sleep early, and normally, I should say, I was going to say normally I sleep through it. That used to be the fact, not anymore. But for the last couple of years, I don't know what's happened. Maybe my age has changed. I don't know. But anyway, so now I do wake up and people honk their horn around at midnight. But anyway, but it's normally the end of the summer learning program. I'm exhausted. It doesn't bother me. But apparently it's a big thing here, right? It's a tourist thing. It's a big thing. People love it. And all people say, you know, there's so much money goes to waste in it. First of all, I'm not even sure that works economically, because it could be it brings, not COVID, but it should be it brings such tourism that even on economies of scale, maybe it's worth it. I don't know. But even if it's not, I'm not sure that's incorrect. It's a kosher form of pride. It's a kosher form of entertainment. Sydney Siders seem to love it for some reason. And unless you've got a philosophical problem with fireworks, that could be a different issue. But I'm not going there. But I'm just saying it's part of well-being for people to have something to feel proud about, something, right? Something to feel excited about. Even if, I mean, again, there are individuals that couldn't care. It doesn't talk to me at all. But I'm just saying, it doesn't mean that I don't see for some people it's important. For some people, they live every year, months, they talk about it, right? The radio, they bring in the people to actually describe how it happens. I want so fast, it's fascinating. They brought the guy who does it to actually explain how it all happens, computer art. It brings, I don't know how to do, what's the word in English, but in Yiddish we call it, it brings a certain chayas, like a certain energy, a certain vitality, right? So it is wrong. Now, obviously, there are certain things that are more important than others. Hospitals are more important than sports. We get that, right? Of course. That's 100% true. But what we do learn, there is a flip side to this. And the flip side to it is that there is many, many components to people's life. Physical well-being. I'm going to talk soon about spiritual well-being and emotional well-being and so on and so forth. And we can't just, this is the chacham aspect that we should really learn from this year. Because there are places who just became fixated, for example, on lockdown and never graduated. There are places, I mean, for example, here in New South Wales, we also got locked down for the first couple of months. And then we learned a little bit how to manage it, right? Some places that haven't learned. And because they're just looking on now. Because we know, I mean, it's fact. If you lock people up, they won't get the virus. That's true. No one can dispute that. If you stay in your house the whole time, you've got very little chance of getting a virus. You also got a lot of chance of having mental health problems and lots of other health problems, right? So that's what I'm saying. So the lesson is this concept of chacham, a wise person, is looking at the bigger picture and looking at nuances, not extremes, right? Which goes to everything, really, because I think, I mean, now also, again, and I'm not getting into the politics of it, I mean, I'm not an anti-vaxxer at all, by the way, but vaccination also, there's, you know, but I can't stand extremes. You know, I have a doctor that I talked to, and I love the way he speaks, because I asked him about the vaccine. I'm going to take the vaccine, obviously, when it becomes available, if it's available and it's anything, right? I think people should take it, but I asked him, what does he think, right? So you've got the people who are so crazy, they think that Bill Gates put a little chip into the vaccine. I mean, that's ridiculous, right? But the truth is, you've got on the other side also extremes. You've got people that say, no, vaccine's the best thing that leads. No risk whatsoever. That's wrong. You don't know anything about it. It's a new thing. You don't know. Now, if you're an intelligent person and you look at it from a philosophical point of view, you look at it from an ethical point of view, I've researched this from a halachic point of view. It's actually fascinating. It's another discussion to see what halacha says about doing something that has a potential risk. So you have to weigh up risk versus benefit, right? So I spoke to my doctor, and I think he's a very wise person. He says, I can't tell you there's no risk. I can tell you that when you start to travel, from all the data we have till now, that the risk of traveling is much more than the risk of the potential risk from the vaccine, given the data we have now, but that could change. Now, he told me this, for example, before they started rolling out 3.5 million vaccines in Israel. That's now slightly changed, because now we see the risk is even less than maybe we thought, but we don't know the long term. So it's about being wise and considering lots of other things and then coming to a decision based on the bigger picture. Now, this is true with everything in life, right? Really what I've been sharing with you is just more of an example. It's more the lesson that we learn. But the truth is, it's true in everything in life. There's a concept we once talked about the two most important things that God created the world with, right? Which is so important, the way we live our lives, the way we relate to other people, and the way we respond to situations. So the Talmud says, Chotamo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emet, you might remember this. The Talmud says that the seal, the brand name of God, is truth. Truth. Justice, truth, and so on. On the other hand, we find that we find in the Talmud tells us that Lo nitna Torah ela lasot shalom ba'olam. The Torah was given to make peace in the world. So, because God and peace is like best friends, right? The truth is, excuse the pun, but the truth is that truth and peace don't always go together. Correct? So you have some people who will do everything for the sake of peace. They'll sacrifice the truth to the nth degree for the sake of peace and end up corrupt. You have some people who will sacrifice everything for truth and don't care about peace and end up lonely or with damaged relationships or dysfunctional lives, right? Now, there are guidelines, there are moral guidelines, there are ethical guidelines. But because people, as we've said this many, many times, we talk about the pendulum, people, and it's unfortunately, look at the political situation in America, unfortunately it's getting worse. People live in extreme boxes. So you have the peace people and the truth people, or you have the right people, left people, right? And they're both all wrong. Life doesn't work like that. Life works with tiferet. We have to have the ability to look at the bigger picture and to look at it from a nuanced point of view. To say, well, two truths can be true at the same time. What are the consequences if I respond this way now? So if I, for example, attack someone because I'm defending the truth, but what's the long-term consequences? Maybe there's a different way to say it. Maybe I can temper it a bit. Or like there's a Yiddish saying, you know, you're not allowed to, I mean, dishonesty is a terrible thing. But there's, you know, the Yiddish say, I mean, daftin zogen aligin, you don't have to tell a lie, but you don't always have to tell the whole truth. Sometimes you have to just not talk, right? Not, you don't have to be the ambassador for truth every single time, every single day, every single situation. You're not God's policeman. Sometimes don't get involved. Sometimes yes, get involved. Sometimes it's questions. Sometimes we have to consult. Sometimes we have to read literature on moral and ethics to know what to do. But the starting point has to be creating a balance between the now and the future, between the right and the left, between chesed and gevura, between shalom and emet, between, right? That's all coming back to the same thing. It's the ability to look at nuances, to look at a bigger picture, and to look at consequences, right? We find this generally. This concept, when we have this foundation, we have this incredible gift then to deal with short-term emotional pain, for example, and to sometimes achieve something like forgiveness, right? So Rabbi Sacks talks about this in one of his articles. We've talked about it many, many times, about the ability of Yosef HaTzadik to forgive his brothers, right? Again, back to Joseph, how he was sold by his brothers, and they did the wrong thing to him. Extremely so. The Talmud says that we're still suffering from it, and there was long-term consequences from the things that the choice that they made to sell their only brother, to sell a lonely brother, down to Egypt as a slave, and he was thrown into dungeon, and he spent horrible time there. He was away from his family. He was 10, 12 years in jail. He was disconnected from everything and everyone. Terrible, terrible situation. And yet, he found it within him to completely forgive his brothers. Why? Because this is more of a spiritual thing. He says the reason. And the reason was because he says, I looked at the bigger picture. And I saw that I actually landed up in Egypt for a reason. Bigger picture. Was it wrong that I landed up in the beginning? Yes. Short term, it was a wrong thing. Did you do a terrible thing? He didn't say you did the right thing. He never agreed with them. He never said, no, thanks for sending me down to Egypt. No, you did the wrong thing, and you have to find forgiveness within yourself, between you and God, and that's your problem. But I cannot hold a grudge because I look at a much, much bigger picture. Because when you believe in God, generally believing in God means to believe in a bigger picture. To believe in Ashkacha Pratit, to believe that things are part of a big puzzle, right? So in the case of his particular thing, he said that he looked at the bigger picture. He realized after the whole story with the dreams and the advice that he gave Pharaoh and the position he got in, and therefore he was able then, because the famine, when the years of famine came, the years of famine spread to Israel as well. Jacob and his own family and his own brothers had no food to eat, and eventually landed up in Egypt, fed by the very brother that they sold. Right? So he said, I see that. And the words he used, beautiful words, he says, Ki lemichya shlachani aleichem. Because God sent me here to Egypt to provide sustenance for you. That's why I landed up here. I mean, I could have landed up here a bit better, but in a different way maybe, but that's why I landed up here, ultimately, the bigger picture. Now, sometimes we're lucky and we get to see the bigger picture, sometimes we don't. But that knowing that there's a bigger picture, generally in life, gives us that strength. Rabbi Sacks here brings from someone called Joseph Heller, and he says, history is not a trash bag of random coincidences blown open into the wind. It has a purpose, a point, a plot. God is at work behind the scenes. There's a divinity that shapes our ends, and so on and so forth, right? So therefore, there's that bigger picture which you always have to consider. So this concept of looking beyond the now also helps us in our faith. It helps us deal with challenges because we realize that what we experience today is part of a much bigger picture, is part of a much bigger thing, right? And that gives us a general tool of how to deal with setbacks in life. If we understand that the setback is not just the setback, but it's part of a plan, it's part of a bigger thing, it gives us that ability to do that as well. You know, he brings an interesting thing. I mean, it's a known fact, but in this article he brings about J.K. Rowling, you know, with her famous thing, right? You know, that she was rejected by 12 publishers. Pretty incredible. And he quotes Winston Churchill, who said that success is the ability to go from one failure to another with no less enthusiasm, which is a great line, right? Now, this concept of a nuanced approach, right, has many, many, many examples in general, right? Part of this idea of looking at the bigger picture also means that we develop an ability to understand that two things can be right at the same time. If we look at a bigger picture, right? If we look at a small microcosm, then it's only one right and one wrong. But when we look at a bigger thing, then two rights can be wrong. Two things can be right at the same time. And there's so many examples of this, but I'll just bring you one because it's just very current. I hope I'm not doing the wrong thing here, but anyway, because I know it's very, and you'll see what I mean. Obviously, I don't mean what some people may interpret it as that, right? So there's this interesting project I've been reading about now in the headlines, which is a fantastic project. Obviously, there's lots of stuff. You know, I think it came from the whole thing in Canberra with the alleged abuse, sexual abuse, and so on and so forth. So now there's a huge project in private schools, boys' private schools particularly, to teach the meaning of consent, right? Which I think is a very, very good project. It's an amazing project.
I'm not sure why it has to be about private schools.
I also don't know. I don't know. I'm just saying, that's the project. Yeah. Why is private school? I don't know.
Because private schools don't have
co-education. Maybe because it's more...
Boys and girls.
Yeah, but they're still boys, so they should still learn.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's all boys, right? No. I mean, so the reality is we live in it. I mean, yeah, so it's a simple reality. We live in a reality where boys often not, I mean, where there's a lot of frivolity, a lot of openness, a lot of permissiveness, and things happen, and bad things happen, and bad things happen, largely, not altogether, but largely to do with males not understanding how to treat women, how to treat girls, not understanding the meaning of consent, and so on and so forth. So it's an unbelievable project. It's a very, very good project, right? Good. This morning I see a principal that got into big trouble. Why did he get into big trouble? It's such an example of this. It's an amazing thing. Now, a boy who does something to a girl without consent, or does it go without consent, it's evil, right? It's absolutely wrong. Let me just make it very clear. There's no two ways about it. It's wrong. However, today a principal got into real, real, real trouble. Why? Because he dared suggest that we should educate the girls as well. That maybe it's not such a good idea to get involved in drunken parties when you're 17 years old, right? And of course, or younger, correct. And of course, political correctness. How can you say such a thing? You blaming the victim, the whole thing, right? That's a typical example of not being able to look at something in a nuanced way. Because when you say, so for example, I always give the simple example. If someone breaks into your house, that person is the robber. That person did the wrong thing. No one else did the wrong thing, that person. If you leave your door open, you're an idiot. It's as simple as that, right? Does that make you wrong? No. Does it make you evil? No. Have you done anything evil? No. But if you don't put a lock, evil exists in the world. It's a fact. There are people that break into houses. Should they break into houses? No. Should we have a better education to teach people the value of honesty and not break into people's houses? Absolutely. Is it going to help? A little bit. Is it going to help completely? No, it's not. Will there always be robbers in the house? Yes, there will. So what's the advice? To keep screaming how bad robbers is, or maybe also to do something about protecting yourself? Maybe to put an alarm system in your house, right? It's very simple. Right? So it's exactly the same. It's exactly the same here. Two truths can be true. Two things can be true at the same time. But society just can't handle this. Right? So
society can't handle it now. This political correctness has gone.
Yes, correct. And we move, that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm talking about it. So it's funny, we're coming out of a year of 2020 where we should have learned this lesson, but society's not learning this lesson. And at least in our own private lives we can, right? So yes, is the project about teaching boys the value of consent a great thing? Brilliant thing. If they do the wrong thing, are they the perpetrator and no one else? Absolutely. Does that mean it's a good idea for a young girl to get involved in a drunken party? Don't think so. Right? Because there's always going to be bad people out there. There's always going to be people doing the wrong thing. Right? There's nothing wrong in everyone taking a little bit of responsibility for overall well-being and general responsible living. Right? And it's the kind of, we live in a society now. I mean, I it's an interesting thing, right? I mean, I've shared this with you now. But I will be honest with you and tell you that I even thought about where I should bring this up, right? Because it's on Facebook and it's being recorded. And we live in such a cancel culture today that it's just not normal, right? I mean, it is possible. I hope not. And I know you'll back me up if this happens, so it won't happen, right? And if it did, I'm going to get an article signed by all of you sitting here. No, right? It is possible that some guy listening out there on Facebook, who I don't know, will put into next week's Jewish News that Rabbi Gerari said he's blaming the victim. Now, that's being silly. I'm joking. I don't think it'll happen, right? But it's possible in the society. Why? Because you're not allowed to say it, because there's no nuances today. There's no way of looking at a new, there's no nuanced approach. It's just become crazy.
The bottom line is they're taking God, they're trying to take God out of the system.
Well, it's also true. That's
then you've got your opinion and my opinion on the other side. So
so you're making a very valid point generally, because the truth is that it goes back to the chesed and gvura thing, right? So So it goes back to the ability to have two things, contradictory things almost happen at the same time, is actually a godly thing, actually. So it comes from understanding that both come from God and God are true, and that two things, and that the infinity of God actually be something that sort of holds both things together at the same time, which is true, right? So this is just an example. It's an example that happened this week, so I'm bringing it up. But truth is, there's many, many, many examples like this, right? Where we have to teach and educate ourselves both truths at the same time. It's true in our relationships. So it's true about being right and being clever. So in our relationships, the same thing, right? We want to do something and alleviates a long... By the way, it's true generally. It's true in self-control, right? I want to get angry at someone because they hurt me. The question is, am I looking at the consequence? Am I looking at the nuances, right? Sometimes, like, if, you know, often we've had this discussion about how can you forgive someone? You know, it's an interesting thing. So I remember I did a series on forgiveness, right?
Yes.
And it was a long series. It was a six-week series, I think. But the point of the whole series was that, again, it's a nuanced approach, that forgiveness is not agreeing that the person did something wrong. Anyway, subsequently, that's just an interesting thing. I wrote two articles about forgiveness, which were based on the series that we did. You know, one of my weekly articles, in my book as well. So, but there's an organization called Chabad.org. I don't know if I'm sure many of you have seen the thing. And so many of my articles are on, they put it on Chabad.org. And whenever there's a comment on the article, they send me an email. Like, it's an automated thing, right? The most, I must have maybe 30 articles on the website, right? The most commented article is the forgiveness one. And it's mostly about people finding it very challenging. But how can I forgive them if they were wrong? You get it? Because the same thing. It's very hard for people to get their head around, I can forgive them and they're wrong, and that's both true. And it's not contradictory, right? Same idea. So why I want to bring it up today is because I think it's a really important lesson to learn from this year. It's a lesson, unfortunately, that, like you say, it's not being learned. It should have been learned this year, but it's not being learned. It's not being learned even in some COVID practices. It's certainly not being learned politically, and it's certainly not being learned societally. I mean, the cancel culture that's happening today has never, ever happened. It's crazy. It's the most craziest thing. And most of the time, 99% of the time, it's nothing to do with... It's people agreeing on the fundamentals. They're just saying it differently. It's also like, you know, we can agree on two values, but, like, for example, but if you don't say it exactly the way I say it, or you don't implement it exactly the way I implement it, or you don't practice it exactly the way I practice it, then you're all trafe kind of thing. You're not, you know, you're not good. Or it's this idea of saying, well, no, this is wrong, but this is also wrong, and this, you need to do both. And you, like this case I've just brought for you, which is true. And this is, I think, the lesson which we have to take away from 2020 to learn how to be more nuanced, to look at the bigger picture. When we do something now, to consider the consequences, what's the bigger picture? I might do something now and I might feel good about it. I might do something now and I might alleviate a problem now but create a much bigger problem later. Like in relationships, for example, I might let the person know that they've hurt me, but I might do it in such a way where long-term for the relationship it's not good. This is particularly true in parenting, but it's true in all relationships. And we just need to learn how to take all information, take the both levels of chacham, learn from the information we already have, learn from the information that we anticipate, look at the puzzle, look at the bigger picture, and then make a decision, and learn to live with this concept that many things can be true at the same time, and there's many pieces to the puzzle, and if that guides our decision from a moral and ethical point of view, we'll have a much, much healthier and much, much more responsible life. Have a good week.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Welcome, thank you.
Mandy had to leave because she realized she was giving a lecture to the Jewish Museum.
Oh, okay. No problem. That's okay. Sounds good. I believe it.